Good morning, Bill Lynch with the CBS World News Roundup. Yesterday, Sheikh Ahmed Zaki Yamani was one of the world's most powerful men. Today, he's just another unemployed technocrat. The oil empire was shocked yesterday when Saudi Arabia's King Fahd fired Yamani from his post as oil minister, a job he had held for nearly a quarter century. Richard Wagner reports from London.
The ouster of Sheikh Ahmed Zaki Yamani sent oil prices plummeting on the London Exchange at the opening today, but then they began to stabilize. North Sea oil is selling now at slightly more than yesterday's closing price of almost $13 a barrel. It seems clear the Saudi royal family fired the Harvard-educated Yamani because his strategy for OPEC backfired. Oil journalist Peter Bild.
Saudi Arabia did really what everybody else in OPEC was doing, which was to go for market share and let the price go. That also hasn't proved popular because it hasn't really resulted in a very major increase in OPEC's market share.
What Yamani's policy did result in was a worldwide oil glut and a corresponding weakness in price. What Yamani hoped for was a long-term price rise, as low prices now forced production cuts. But producers such as Iran, Algeria, and Libya, and some members of the Saudi royal family, weren't willing to wait for long-term results. They want higher prices now. Whether they'll get those increases will come down, basically, to the simple facts of supply and demand. Richard Wagner, CBS News, London.
There are reports in Paris that France, working with Syria, has negotiated a three-month truce in terrorist attacks. It's a murky story, reported by correspondent David Jackson.
Published reports here say there's a deal with Syria. The Syrians make sure there's no repeat of the September Paris bombings. The French hint at clemency for alleged terrorist leader Georges Abdullah when he comes to trial early next year. The French foreign minister denies any such deal, but the interior minister concedes there is cooperation between French and Syrian intelligence agencies to avoid further terrorist attacks in France. No details given. There's another twist. French intelligence reportedly has evidence that Syria was involved in the September bombings. But in public, the French government says no such evidence exists, and it refuses to heed Britain's call for diplomatic sanctions against Damascus. France's anti-terrorism cooperation with Syria is apparently at a very sensitive stage, and there's concern for seven French hostages held in Syrian-controlled areas of Lebanon. Still, it was just announced that France is halting shipments of arms to Syria, weapons stemming from deals signed in 1982 and 84. David Jackson, CBS News, Paris.
Two retired officials of Yugoslavia's intelligence service have told the Washington Post that Kurt Waldheim, now president of Austria, was targeted for recruitment as a Soviet bloc agent in the late 1940s, when Waldheim was secretary to Austria's foreign minister. One of the sources says Moscow succeeded in getting Waldheim on the hook by threatening to expose evidence of Nazi war crimes. A Waldheim spokesman denied the allegation, but did acknowledge to the Post that as an officer in Hitler's army, Waldheim took part in a 1942 Nazi campaign in Yugoslavia in which civilians were massacred. Waldheim had earlier denied a role in that operation, but his spokesman now says new research shows he did take part, but only as a supply officer. This morning, Attorney General Mies was asked if Waldheim's new admission will prompt him to place Waldheim's name on the so-called watch list of ex-Nazis barred from entering the U.S.
If there's new material or new information, we will look at that along with the other matters that we're reviewing at the present time.
Mies added that if there is evidence of war crimes, Waldheim will not be allowed in the country. In Honduras, Nicaraguan rebel leader Aristides Sanchez is complaining that not a single bullet has arrived under the new $100 million U.S. government aid package for the Contras. Sanchez says the supplies are needed immediately, with rebel forces entering the seventh day of fighting Nicaraguan forces in a border region. From Managua, Mike O'Connor reports the Contras should start watching the skies.
Highly placed sources say a new program to supply Contra rebels from the air could start as soon as this week. The program is said to include huge American-built C-130 cargo planes flying at night with electronic gear that will help them stay out of the way of Nicaraguan air defenses. Other gear will help the planes find Contra troops on the ground and make accurate supply drops to them. To counter this, according to informed sources, Nicaragua is getting more and better Soviet anti-aircraft missiles to shoot down the supply flights, as well as additional Soviet helicopters to attack Contra troops. Mike O'Connor, CBS News, Managua.
4 years after the bloody Falkland Islands War, new tensions are brewing today over the South Atlantic Islands claimed by both Britain and Argentina. The British, who won that war, have tightened the 150-mile fishing limit around the Falklands. British Foreign Secretary Sir Geoffrey Howe told the House of Commons Britain is prepared to shoot at poachers.
It is, of course, open to Her Majesty's government to use armed forces in appropriate circumstances in the waters around the Falkland Islands, as well as in the waters elsewhere within our jurisdiction.
Argentina, which called the islands the Malvinas, says Britain's move could provoke new conflicts, as we heard from Frederick Tice.
The Argentine government doesn't consider this a serious threat, but it's very upset, as are most of the people here in Buenos Aires, when you get their reaction. The reaction of the Argentine government hasn't been as strong as it could be. At first, President Alfonsín was going to get on the air and talk to the nation, and after a while he decided that it wasn't worth that, and he sent the foreign minister just to brief Congress.
One news agency in Buenos Aires says the armed forces have been put on alert there. Campaigning to keep the Senate in Republican hands, President Reagan stumps today in Colorado and Nevada. White House correspondent Jacqueline Adams gives us the flavor of Mr. Reagan's last hurrah.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States, accompanied by Senator Jim Abner.
As the President continues this final campaign 86 push, there's a certain sameness to the rallies. Mr. Reagan gives the same speech everywhere he goes.
It's an honor to be here today in Rapid City. It's wonderful to be here in Georgia.
At every stop, there are high school bands. At every stop, the president thanks them by name.
The Central High Band, the Douglas High Band, and the Stevens High Band.
Everywhere there are flags and young girls with pom-poms. At every stop, the candidate grabs Mr. Reagan's hand and raises it in a sign of victory. Every stop reflects the president's tremendous personal popularity. And the end of every rally is always the same, with balloons and confetti falling from the sky. But as the president heads toward Nevada and Idaho and Washington State and finally California, the pollsters and the pundits are growing doubtful about the Republicans' goal, keeping control of the Senate next term. Jacqueline Adams, CBS News, with the president in Colorado Springs.
St. Louis has joined the growing ranks of one newspaper cities. Steve Houston reports from CBS radio station KMOX.
The St. Louis Globe Democrat died when the Missouri Supreme Court refused to hear a case challenging the financially strapped newspaper's bid to obtain $2.4 million in state revenue bonds. Globe publisher John Prentice told the paper's 700 employees that they had to know one way or the other by Wednesday whether the bonds could be issued.
I informed them that the court had declined to take jurisdiction and that under the circumstances, it would be too long a period of time before the constitutionality of the provision could be determined, and therefore we found it necessary to cease publication.
This was the third time that the 134-year-old newspaper has gone under. Twice it has been resurrected by another owner. This time, though, officials believe the Globe, recognized as the strongest conservative voice in Missouri, will shut down for good. Steve Houston for CBS News, St. Louis.
The city's surviving paper, the Post-Dispatch.